Welcome to another episode of the Your Brain Uncovered podcast, where it is my job to interview pioneering scientists and authors to tease out some of their most fascinating work. I'm Naya Tarabin. I'm a translational neuroscience student and a researcher at University College London. Also want to emphasize that this podcast is my personal goal of bringing zero cost to consumer information. It is separate from my other roles. Today, my guest is Dr. Catherine Dyke. Dr. Catherine is an assistant professor at the Faculty of Science at the University of Nottingham. Her work mainly focuses on using a range of techniques to understand the neurobiology of developmental disorders and to develop novel therapies based on this understanding. She has developed a particular interest in Tourette's syndrome, and today she is joining us specially to talk about this new brain stimulation technique that is being used to treat Tourette's. Dr. Catherine, welcome to the show. It's an honor to have you here.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Oh, anytime. it's been long awaited. Since our episode really centers around Tourette's, I believe the question begs itself. How would you best define what Tourette's syndrome is?
So Tourette's syndrome is a neurodevelopmental disorder. Mm-hmm. So it's characterized by these tics, which are movements and sometimes vocalizations that people might have. They're usually involuntary and they might repeat quite a few times sometimes. So for most people, this will present when they're start kind of presenting aged about 4 to 7, but we do have people who start showing symptoms much later. It's much more common in males than females. We have diagnosis rate of about 3 times as many males as we do in females. Mm-hmm. And it affects about 1% of the school age population in some forms. So tic disorders are a lot more common than a lot of people think they are. And the other really important thing with Tourette's syndrome is because of the media's portrayal of it, a lot of people think that Tourette's syndrome is these kinds of involuntary swearing type tics.
Yeah.
But actually, that only reflects about 10% of people who have Tourette's syndrome. So the majority of people don't actually have that. They might have vocal tics, but it's much more common to have things like throat clearing and different noises. Mm. Whereas the media representation is quite skewed, actually, in terms of what it shows Tourette's syndrome as.
Okay.
The other thing with Tourette's syndrome is it's actually very commonly occurs with other conditions. So up to about 85% of people who have a diagnosis of Tourette's syndrome will have another condition as well. So the most common things that sort of co-occur with Tourette's syndrome are things like ADHD, so mm-hmm. attention deficit disorders, and OCD.
Okay.
So people who have Tourette's syndrome, they might have various things that are sort of the symptoms that annoy them the most. Sometimes it's not just the tics. It could be a lot of people report the sensations they have before they do a tic. So before people do tics, quite often they will have a sensation of sort of pressure or irritation that kind of builds until they do a tic. Almost like if you're trying to hold in a yawn or a sneeze, that kind of sensation that you feel building, that you need to do something, that's yeah. quite common. And for some people, that's also a very frustrating symptom to deal with the condition, as well as these other things that might come up. So things like anxiety and things like that, which quite often co-occur with Tourette's syndrome.
Oh, wow. Okay, so that there are a range of... So Tourette's mainly is a neurological condition, right? And it comes not with only the tics that we usually see in movies and read about in books like, you know, Oliver Sacks and stuff. It's there's more to it. So there's the cuffs, the twitches, the involuntary movements. And no one really knows what causes it. But is there any maybe, is it more nature or nurture, or is it a mix of both? What causes this? Is it an imbalance in the brain's neurotransmitters? I mean, there's so many, you know, speculations, but what's the main reason?
Yeah, so that's one of the big questions, really, in Tourette's syndrome. Mm. So we know that there's not a specific gene, there's not a singular specific brain area.
Yeah.
So if you were to look at scans of people with and without Tourette's syndrome, you couldn't point to an area and go, oh, that person has Tourette's. Yeah. What it seems to involve is a sort of complex network involved in the production of movement. There are subtle differences in there in people who have Tourette's compared to people who do not. We know that it does seem to run in families. So this usually comes up when people are getting a diagnosis, in that parents won't necessarily have a formal diagnosis of Tourette syndrome, but when you take a family history, you might find that they actually did have things that we would now class as tics in their childhood. The thing is with tics is they're very common, these kind of motor tics. A lot of people have them and just don't notice. So it wouldn't necessarily meet the formal diagnosis of Tourette syndrome, but you might know people who maybe when they're anxious or nervous do something like repeated throat clearing.
Yes.
Or maybe they sort of roll their shoulder a certain way. Mm. Well, in some ways, these behaviours are very similar to the kind of tics we see in Tourette syndrome. And sometimes people might have, you know, a family history in that even though parents may not have a diagnosis of Tourette syndrome, they might as children have displayed some of these behaviours.
Okay.
So even though we can't find a specific gene, and it's likely, as in many, many disorders, that there are multiple things that contribute, we do know that there is a slight link between families. So it's there. It's, it's not, you know, huge, huge, huge in that there's not one gene, but it's definitely there. We know with tics as well that they do seem to get worse for people in sort of highly stressful situations. So the symptoms themselves can respond to environment. So this disorder primarily affects younger people. So things like stressful school situations, exams, maybe getting on public transport, things like that can make tics harder for people. It can make them more frequent or larger. So there is an environmental aspect of it. Also, occasionally we see people who develop tics later in life, and some of these people will develop tics maybe after a traumatic event, and we're not exactly sure why that is, or if these kind of developments of tics and Tourette syndrome are exactly the same between our younger populations, who the typical kind of presentation is these younger children who start with a few tics, probably sort of motor things, and then go on to sort of build tics up a little bit, have a peak in sort of early adolescence, and then actually start to reduce their tics as they get older. And a lot of people will actually grow out of the majority of their tics. A substantial amount won't, and some people will still have tics in their adulthood, but a lot of people actually will see a massive reduction. And these are kind of some of the key questions that we'd really love to know within Tourette's research is, looking at, you know, who do tics reduce for? Who do they stay for, you know, for a sort of lifetime prevalence? If there are sort of major differences between these people who present in childhood and these people who have these kind of more sudden onset in later adult life. So these are some of the like really big questions in Tourette's research. And at the moment, we just don't know.
Okay, so there's a lot of room for more research to dive into, obviously. It's just, I find it quite, you know, bizarre how much of an impact it has on, you know, action control. So, I mean, tics is just something that represents all the difficulties and challenges that on behavioral and social, you know, challenges that an individual can face with such a syndrome. And I just wanted to know, I know that there's no cure, but are there any current available treatments that can maybe, you know, help the individual cope with it or maybe reduce the tics in any certain way?
Yes, so there are a few things. The two most common ones that you could get on the NHS, for example, are behavioural therapies.
Okay.
So some of these look at things like recognising the feelings you get before you need to tick. So these things that we'd call these premonitory urges. And then sometimes doing something that would kind of disrupt that tick. So you might do another action, which would mean that you can't do your normal tick, for example. So these are sort of these habit reversal therapy type approaches. So there are some behavioral approaches. Unfortunately, what we know is that there aren't that many Tourette specialists in the UK. So people can be waiting quite a long time for these therapies, which can be really, really frustrating. The other main kind of source of treatment at the moment is using pharmacology. So using drugs like Clondine or Aripiprazole. So those can be very effective for some people, but they also do come with side effects for quite a lot of people. And because Tourette syndrome is mostly prevalent in our younger age group, it quite often puts people off wanting to take medication because it's quite a hard decision, you know, whether to put, you know, say an 8-year-old, a 10-year-old on some of these drugs. They can be very, very helpful, but for some people, the side effects kind of outweigh the benefits of them. So one of the things that the research group that I work in are really keen on doing is looking at other treatments that we might be able to develop.
Okay.
So things that we might be able to make more accessible to people, and things that don't have the kind of side effects that we see with the current medications.
All right. Now, I mean, if we were to focus on the current available, you know, pharmacotherapies, is it mostly antipsychotics that are being prescribed? Because that is something I'm very interested in knowing more of.
Yeah, so it tends to be drugs that are kind of within that group.
So they
have quite a lot of side effects on some of them.
So then what else is there available? What other techniques? What have you been working on with your team?
So in our group, we're very interested in these types of non-invasive brain stimulation approaches.
Mm-hmm.
So that's quite important to note as well, is that in more extreme cases, so people with very, very strong, very repetitive, very, very disruptive tics, deep brain stimulation is another potential therapeutic option.
Interesting.
That seems to be very effective. That would be in sort of the most severe cases of people. Mm-hmm. So people who have very strong, very repeated, very large tics can actually end up doing substantial damage to their joints, their muscles, because they're doing a very kind of large movement repeatedly again and again and again, sort of days and days and days and weeks and months, which can cause quite a lot of damage as well as quite a lot of stress. So in people who have those kind of tics, they can sometimes be candidates for this deep brain stimulation. It is very effective. But it is also, you know, a majorly invasive procedure. It involves implanting electrodes directly into the brain and then stimulating there. So what we do isn't deep brain stimulation. We do non-invasive stimulation. So this involves doing things on the scalp level. And then inducing activity on the surface of the brain, or maybe done through networks, slightly deeper structures. So my past work has looked at a technique called transcranial direct current stimulation, or TDCS. And that works by, we run a very, very low intensity current between two electrodes over an area of the brain that we're interested in modulating.
Okay.
So the idea with this is that if we can find a bit of the brain that we know from previous research is slightly different in terms of its balance of excitation inhibition within people with Tourette's, is that we can maybe modulate that with these kind of approaches. So that's what I spent quite a lot of my thesis work doing. And what we did find is that in some people, we did have a small effect and we did seem to be able to reduce their tics a little bit, but it's quite varied, and we're not quite sure who this works for at the moment. A similar approach can be done using another technique called transcranial magnetic stimulation, which works a little bit differently in that case, it's an induced current on the cortical surface, whereas with TDCS, you're running the current directly over the scalp, sort of between two electrodes. TMS kind of bypasses that by this complicated electromagnetic induction process, but it does mean that you can get slightly stronger influence on that bit of the brain tissue. So studies with that are, again, kind of mixed. There have been some promising ones that seem to show that it can be effective in reducing tics for people. But in general, this field has quite mixed findings, and we're not exactly sure who it works for, why it works for them, you know, how exactly to tailor the parameters that we use to make it kind of the most effective. So that kind of research is still ongoing in lots of different labs. There's quite a lot of interest in it, because if it works, what we'll be able to do is slightly modulate these systems that are involved in producing these involuntary movements and vocalizations, and potentially have a longer sort of impact as treatment without the kind of side effects we see with medications. What our research group have been looking at, and particularly the research group led by Professor Stephen Jackson at the University of Nottingham more recently, yeah, is a slightly different approach where we've been stimulating the median nerve. So the median nerve runs sort of from your wrist up to your brain. And if we stimulate that, we're using these kind of electrical pulses, what we find is that we can have an impact on some of these sensory and motor regions that we know are involved in Tourette syndrome. And we had some really exciting work out really recently, a couple of years ago, where we found that actually doing these pulses at the nerve actually had a really significant impact on people's tics and also their urge to tic. So during the stimulation, people reported not actually having these sensations before the tic, and also they just didn't produce as many tics at all. And it was quite a dramatic effect, in that you could tell just by looking at the videos when we'd stimulated versus when we weren't stimulating. So you could actually see between the on and off phase of the protocol. So that's been really, really exciting. And what we've been working on now is this much larger trial.
Okay.
Where we're looking in a lot more people. So I think we're looking at about 135 people now, to see how well this works in sort of a bigger population, and how using this daily might have an effect. So we're really, really excited about that, because this involves just wearing a kind of like a slightly large smartwatch, basically, that delivers a stimulation. So it's really great in that we're hoping that we can develop it into something that people can use in their daily lives. So without the kind of side effects that we have with the medications, without the kind of issues of being on waiting lists and things for these behavioral treatments, and also without having to bring people into the university all the time or into hospital clinics to do these kind of other approaches like TDCS and TMS that involve kind of these transcranial type approaches. So we're really, really excited about that, and we're looking forward to seeing what it shows. I mean, we don't know yet, the trial's ongoing, and the data isn't in, but we're really hopeful that that's actually going to be a big step forwards.
I mean, it sounds extremely promising, and my mind is just churning with questions at this point. I just wanted to ask, so since this isn't like a kind of rising new form of the therapy that you're seeking to offer and then turn it into maybe a suitable therapeutic device, have you seen any significant difference on the, you know, the cognitive tasks and behavioral tasks that individuals take on? Have you seen any difference in their performance before and after taking on this form of therapy?
Yeah, so that's an excellent question. One of the things that we did look at in the very early trials with this, mm-hmm, was we looked not in patients, but we looked in sort of healthy adults, okay, to see if when we were giving the stimulation, if we were affecting their sort of ability to do a fairly simple but an attention task.
All right.
And what we found was that actually it didn't have any impact on that aspect of cognition. So that's really, really nice for us, in that it suggests that we're not interfering on these sort of bigger, higher order systems. So we shouldn't be kind of having a negative effect on behavior, but we do seem to be able to target these symptoms and Tourette's quite well. So we were quite encouraged by that finding.
Okay, that's amazing. I mean, you're building on a synthesis of previous work, and it really seems to be paying off. I just wanted to ask, so if we were to get into the nitty-gritties, are there any changes that occur at a molecular and cellular level that kind of drive this neuronal cascade and the improvement and prevention of the urge to want to tick? Would you be able to get into the details a little?
Sure. So this particular effect with the median nerve stimulation, what we've shown we can do with this is that we can kind of synchronize these neural oscillations. So we can kind of get them in line with basically this external source a little bit. And that's particularly in kind of somatosensory regions of the brain.
Mm-hmm.
So we know that these regions, these cortical level regions, are involved in kind of producing tics and executing them. So what we think we're doing, what we hope we're doing with this, is that actually by kind of just slightly disrupting these or slightly modulating them, I suppose is a better word, that's making it less likely that these kind of, if you like, erroneous signals that people in Tourette's are getting to move and produce these tics, what we seem to be doing is maybe disrupting them by engaging these bits of the brain with this kind of external mechanism, electrical pulsing, effectively. So,
I see how it is. And do you really know how long do the effects of this technique last for post-treatment?
No, so that's one of the things we're looking at in this big trial ongoing, is we want to know, we want to look at lots of different things, but one of the big questions is, do these effects outlast the stimulation period?
Mm-hmm.
How much stimulation do we need to give? How many days do we need to use it to see that, if we see it? So that's one of the big questions that we're looking at. What we know from our sort of initial experiments is that it seems to be very effective during the stimulation, so kind of immediately in that period. Mm. So ideally what we'll also see is sort of these longer term effects as well. But quite encouragingly, even if we don't, some feedback has been that, being able to control tics within a short period of time would be great. So, for example, people who have Tourette's sometimes find things like going to the airport very stressful. It's a stressful situation, which tends to exacerbate tics.
Yeah.
So for people, particularly for people who do have these vocal tics, for them, something that they can use just in that moment to kind of help with their tics and slightly reduce their urges to tic could be quite helpful. We would love to see both, right? That would be fantastic. we don't know what we're gonna get yet, but we have sort of all the methods and things pre-registered and out there, so we will see.
That's quite exciting, because I mean, so far so good. The method itself is flexible. It sounds, you're making it sound very simple to operate. To be honest, as a neuromodulating technique, you're making it sound quite simple. And from as far as I can see it, the safety and tolerability has been well established within your sample, right?
Yeah. So it feels a bit weird. It does feel a little bit strange, the sensation at your wrist. But we can, most people find it fine. It's a little bit odd.
Does it have like mild adverse side effects?
Some people can kind of feel it when it's on.
Oh, okay.
As a sort of slightly tingly, odd sensation.
Maybe ticklish.
And it varies in terms of how much people find that annoying or how much they feel it even. Some people don't feel it so much. Some people don't feel it that much, but are quite bothered by it. Some people, report feeling it a bit stronger, but actually they're fine with it. So, like any kind of sensory input, people's sort of impressions of that are going to vary.
Of course, it's quite subjective.
Yeah. So most people can sort of feel something, but not everyone. And some people find it absolutely fine. Some people don't like it that much. It's, you know, it's a bit of a mix. And really importantly for all our work, if people don't like it, then we would, they are not encouraged to carry on with any of the trials, because we don't want people to be doing something they don't like and they don't want to do. So
obviously, I mean, it's there to make their lives easier. And it's, if they're not willing to like take on those side effects, then plenty of other therapies available, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, definitely. But honestly, it sounds so promising, and I'm really looking forward to seeing it turn into, you know, the ideal therapeutic device, hopefully in the future for Tourette's. Where, lastly, before ending this episode, where would you say there's room for improvement with this technique, so that it can? What do you think there's that? What do you think should be improved for it to be clinically translated and be used on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, so these are the kind of things we're looking at in this big trial, really. Okay. So we need to work out things like, is there a particular kind of person this works for best, mm-hmm. right? And that would be great if we can then say, oh, you know, we think that this would work really well for you. We need to find out if the effects are sort of longer lasting,
okay,
or if they're just there when people are actually using the device. Mm. We do work with people who have Tourette's to see, you know, what they want out of this. So we need to find out things like, you know, how easy people find it to use, how, you know, the devices, it is a sort of wrist wearable thing, but it's not that small yet, so okay. Maybe people might like it to be designed slightly differently. Mm-hmm. And we need to look at sort of comparing the kind of pulses that we give with other ones, so sort of with control conditions, so we can work out really what the kind of mechanism is.
Looking at, you know, all the work that has been done, where do you see the future of this new brain stimulation technique going? What do you hope to expand on, and what do you hope to see?
And we're working really, really closely with the UK charity Tourette's Action, who are funding some of this research. So we really want to have this develop with people who are going to use it, so we can get it, you know, to be the most useful it can possibly be. So we've got lots of work to do, but we're really excited to do it. So that's where we're at the moment.
No, that sounds lovely, and I'm gonna make sure to, you know, stay in touch and just follow up on your work, because it's quite promising. And I'm gonna put a link as well to Tourette's Action's charity website, because that could be helpful. Maybe if our listeners would like to, you know, really get involved in any way possible, the link will be right there in the show notes. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Catherine, for your time. I'm taking way too much of it, but it's been a pleasure speaking to you.
It's been lovely. Thank you so much for having me. It's been great.
Anytime, honestly. I'm highly grateful for, you know, being able to have you here on my show, honestly. And for all you listeners out there, I've provided a link to Dr. Dyke's discussed publication right down in the show notes, along with other works of her and her lab. If you want to support the podcast, please do subscribe on Spotify and leave us a comment if you have any feedback for us, so we can improve the podcast experience for you. We'll see you on the next episode. Thank you for listening, and more importantly, thank you for your interest in science.